left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, let's get another edition of Flames Talk underway. We are underway on this Tuesday, April 22nd from our Groundworks downtown studio. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We've got lots to talk about, lots to get into this hour, second half of the hour, Daily Flames Roundtable on this Tuesday. First half of the hour, though, let's focus in on Zane Parekh, because I think it is safe to say, as the offseason is officially underway here on Flames Talk, Wes, I think it's safe to say, and unless you disagree, in which case we can have a discussion about it, but like, I think the biggest story of training camp is going to be Zane Parekh. Like, if I project to mid-September when everybody's back and we get ready for a brand new season, I think the conversation about what will Zane Parekh's second training camp be like, will he or won't he start the season in the NHL? Who is he? Like, how much opportunity is he going to get at training camp? How much are the Flames going to set him up for success through the preseason? I think all of that is going to be the biggest story with the number one prospect in the organization. That's the very least, if I'm projecting to September, I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comment.
Oof, I was worried for a sec.
I suppose the devil's advocate position on it.
Hold on a second. What is this?
I mean, there's only one place for Zane Parekh to start next season. And so if Zane Parekh doesn't turn out to be the biggest storyline of training camp next season, it's because there's really only one outcome, isn't there? I mean, do we see a world where Zane Parekh is not in some capacity starting next season on the NHL roster?
Very slim chance, yeah. I think, at this point.
Very slim chance. I'm not disagreeing with you. I would only say that if there's stories that get more attention than Zane Parekh next season at training camp, it's probably because it's a bit of a formality. Now, what does him staying look like, I think, is another question. Like, one of the things that I've written recently is, even if he does struggle in training camp,
wherever you get your post media content, by the way,
one of the things I've written is, well, even if he does struggle, do you keep him around for a little bit just to see how fast he can work himself out of it because of the limits on the other options? But yeah, if Zane Parekh is not the biggest story at camp, he's certainly in the biggest spotlight. How's that?
That's a good way of putting it. Yep. Text line's open. Would love to hear your thoughts at 960 this hour. If you're listening live here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. If not, thanks for hanging out with us on the podcast. Look, it was an incredible year for Parekh. And to think that it started slow. Like, it started, I think you could say that the beginning of this season was quite poor for Zane Parekh. He was a bit of, I don't want to say disappointment, but it was a disappointing training camp for him.
Underwhelming, for sure.
Underwhelming, disappointing, frustrating for him. He left training camp kind of with his tail between his legs and then went back to Saginaw in the Ontario League as an 18-year-old in the Ontario League and started slow by his standards. And then it just got ratcheted to a new level, and it finished with 107 points, and it finished with 30-plus goals. And we know the Bobby Orr and the Jamie Rivers and the Ryan Ellis and all the different things that the different numbers that Zane Parekh put up. And then he comes to Calgary.
Love to hear Bobby Orr and Jamie Rivers in the same
sentence. I think Jamie Rivers likes being in that. I don't know if Bobby Orr is the same. Bobby Orr is like, oh, I've always been wanted
he's
to be compared
to Bobby Orr and Jamie Rivers.
Hey, The guy had 122 points one year.
It's impressive.
I don't. If you ask anybody, it's like, where
did that
come from?
Is Bruce Cassidy on that list too?
Yeah, Bruce Cassidy, the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, is on that list. And then he comes to Calgary, practices with the group, and joins them on that California trip. Gets into his first game in Los Angeles last week. Now he's going to the World Championship with Team Canada, which is a really cool kind of cap to his season. He didn't get to represent Canada at the World Juniors. Different management group decided not to bring Zane to the World Juniors, but Kyle Dubas and this World Championship senior men's management group is going to bring Zane Parekh. Plan right now is for exhibition games only, but who knows what can happen? What if he lights the world on fire in those exhibition games? That's not written in stone. That's just the plan as it stands right now, as far as I know. So I don't know. It's been a really, really good year for him. It's been a whirlwind year for him. Let's hear a little bit from Zane Parekh. This is number 89. Is he going to keep that number? That's going to be the number for him in the NHL?
I don't think so.
No?
Is he 19 in junior?
I think so.
Give it to him.
When's the last time there's a number 19 defenseman in the NHL?
Hand it over to him.
By the way, my favorite number of all time, number 19, Steve Yzerman. Obviously, Joe Sakic's my guy.
Yeah. You're not protecting it for a guy who said he wouldn't come back, are you? No, give him the jersey.
It's not a defenseman number.
Give him the jersey.
What's with
Depot? If you're listening, give him 19.
What does Adam Fantilli wear? Doesn't he wear 6 or 4 or something like that?
Rory Karens is a 6. It always crosses me up. And isn't Will Smith wearing 2?
Yeah, Will Smith 2 in San Jose. Like, what are we doing here?
I used to wear 2 in minor hockey because it was the smallest jersey, fit the best.
Were you a D-man?
No. Well, I mean,
that's frustrating.
Yeah.
It's frustrating as well.
2, I like the small jersey.
2 is a defenseman's number.
I was not,
a forward's number.
I was not a large child. I just wanted the smallest jersey.
Anyway, whether he plays 1989, I'd be cool. He has the profile of a 19. 19 to me has always been like dynamic and like a really good player wears number 19.
Yeah. Give him 19.
Here's Zane Parekh from Locker Cleanout Day on Saturday. He sat down, spoke to us for about 10 minutes after his first NHL game, and just kind of look back on the season that was, where it started, and how different things are now less than a year later.
I wasn't comfortable in preseason, and might have been from a shortened summer or not having enough training or all those things, but I felt right from the hop comfortable, and you know, I was really surprised with that. I thought I might be a little nervous heading into that game, but, you know, I took a lot of strides this year and put on a lot of muscle, and I just felt comfortable right away.
It seems pretty obvious that there's not a ton of point in you going back to junior next year. You're going to be too young to play in the NHL. What over the last week and change has sort of shown you that you're ready to be here in the NHL full-time next year?
Yeah, just felt comfortable around the guys. Like, I felt confident the whole time I've been here. Maybe first skate I was a little nervous to see where I'm at. I felt good out there the whole time, though. And you know, I'm looking forward to a really big summer for me. And I got to put in a lot of work. I still got a long ways to go to make this team next year. And the culture that's here, it's unreal. So looking forward to a big summer.
To have played a game, to have scored a goal, what does it create most in you? Like, does it create belief? Does it create motivation to do it again? What's the sort of biggest thing you'll take from that experience Thursday?
I mean, it's my first NHL game. Like, I just tried to soak it all in and kind of enjoy the moment, enjoy the process. And, you know, I tried to stay out as long as I could on that ice. And, you know, I don't think I think the biggest thing I'll take is just how that I could play here. Like, I feel like I belong, and although I got a lot of work to do this summer, like, I feel like hopefully I'll put myself in a really good spot that when I come back next fall, I'll be really pushing to make the team.
So that is Zane Parekh, just a little bit of his conversation with us on Saturday's Locker Cleanout Day. By the way, text line, good stuff. Ryan Whitney wore 19 as a blue liner. Larry Robinson, one of the greatest to ever do it, wore number 19. That's not your typical blue line number. We digress.
Whoa. I was always digressed. You can own this one by yourself.
Okay, fair. I digress. I digress. Fair point by you. What did we see from Zane on Thursday night? It was cool watching that, wasn't it? He scores his first goal. He scores his first goal in a spot you're like, what are you doing there?
Yeah.
But, like, that's who he is. And Ryan Huska said on Thursday morning at Crypto.com Arena, he goes, yeah, he's got the same green light as all the rest of our defensemen. But Zane took a lot of green lights. Mm-hmm. And I was really impressed as a 19-year-old playing in his first NHL game against some good players. Like, L.A. was not... That was not a super thin LA lineup. Doughty was in, Kopitar was in, Fiala was in, Kempe was in. And yeah, they didn't have anything to play for, and they were getting set for game one, which, nice showing, by the way. Well, at least the final minute or so, nice showing. Could have done without that third period, LA, but the result that we were all looking for. I thought he was confident, Wes. I thought that we saw all of the things that make him such a blue chip prospect, like the offensive, the dynamic offensive ability, his confidence jumping into the rush, his ability to pinch, go down deep, and then be back and not catch himself out of position on a regular basis. I thought that a couple of times he made the right choice to shoot, and a number of times made the right choice not to shoot. And the thing that jumped off the page most to me about Parekh in his NHL debut was how much his vision and first pass ability translated instantly to the NHL. Like, there were two or three passes that he made in his own zone to hit the center as an outlet. And I was like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Not only did he hit him in stride, but he hit him like there was no way that pass was getting intercepted because it was so zipped onto the stick. Like, the one time Morgan Frost, I thought it was going to break his stick. And a couple of times I felt like guys were not ready for the pass because it was so on their tape and so there in the snap of a fingers. And I didn't think that the defensive deficiencies or shortcomings or whatever word you want to use for the areas of his game that need development, I didn't feel like they were super detrimental to what the Flames were trying to do either. He's playing with Kevin Ball for the most part in that game. I don't know. I was really impressed with game one for Zane Parekh, and that would have been the case that he scored a goal or not.
Yeah. The big thing that sticks out for me, at least the biggest thing that I found myself kind of taking note of over and over in game one of Zane Parekh's NHL career was the poise. I just thought, and you saw it on some of the breakouts, you saw it, possessing the puck at the offensive blue line. You saw it in a lot of different ways, but I just thought for the youngest defenseman to dress for an NHL game this season, there was...
Which is a nice stat pulled out by Wes.
There's just a ton of poise there. And I think that was probably... That was probably the most encouraging thing if you're looking at it from a Flames perspective is he did not just did he come out on Saturday and say he's felt more comfortable in the NHL, but he looked it. I would say, you know, when I was writing the long read I did earlier this month, I guess over about a month ago on Zane Parekh and tying Bobby Orr's record and all that different stuff. I talked to Sportsnet's Sam Cosentino and we're just kind of shooting it a little bit about Zane. And one of the things he said, and one of the phrases he said is sometimes it looks like he's playing the game in a rocking chair. It's just really relaxed, like really laid back. And I got to tell you, in training camp, I didn't see that at all. I thought his game was borderline hyper in training camp. Like he was just, it was so clear that he was trying to do so much. I didn't see the rocking chair at all. And yet there were a few moments in LA where I kind of laughed to myself because I saw exactly what Sam meant. And you know, in a sport where it's all about relentless work ethic, I think that almost sounds like an insult, but in this case, it's really not. Like he has an ability to dictate the speed that the game is going to be played. And I thought he showed flashes of that in LA. You mentioned obviously the defensive part. Yeah, it wasn't a concern for me in game one. And yet I don't think the LA Kings really pushed in that game. That's probably more to be confirmed for me later. I didn't think game 82 was a really great test of his defensive acumen or his defensive abilities. And yet I thought there was so much to be positive about. You'll know exactly the play I'm thinking of here. He was approaching the offensive blue line at one point, and it was about to go about 1-on-4, and he dumped it into the corner. And I could see in my mind Flames director of player development Ray Edwards fist pumping at home. Like, that is exactly what they've been harping on with Zane Parekh. If a play is not there, don't force it. Take the simple out sometimes. And so I thought, in the extended conversations that I've had about what the Flames have asked Zane to work on, in the conversations I've had with Zane about his priorities, I just thought night one of his NHL career offered a lot of positives in those regards.
Yep, I agree. And I like the word you use, poise. That's exactly what we saw a good chunk of. And it's funny, you mentioned there's two guys that have been very good Flames players over the last 15 years that you could use that same, I love, I can just hear Sam saying it, but like the rocking chair. And when I read your long read, I'm like, I can hear it in Sam's voice,
yeah,
the way he'd say it. But it reminds you a lot of Dougie Hamilton and a lot of Jay Bouwmeester. And
in very different ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if Zane Parekh can be anything like either of those two guys, the Flames have a home run pick on their hands. And maybe there's more. Maybe there's more. But, like, Jay Bouwmeester, I think, was criminally underrated by Flames fans during his time here, or some Flames fans. I don't want to say all Flames fans. Don't want to paint everybody with the same brush. But I think there was a faction of Flames fans who criminally underrated how good Jay was when he was a member of the Flames. And I think Dougie Hamilton, for his couple seasons here, again, did not get the credit he deserved for how good a player he was, because they're both big guys and they're both larger frames, but they don't play a bruising style of hockey. Mm-hmm. You know, they both skated like gazelles. That's just not what their brand is, but they were both really good players as members of the Flames. And I think that if you could get either of those high ends from Zane Parekh, you'll be happy as a Flames fan.
Yeah. It's a fascinating comparable you bring up with Bouwmeester, because he is a great example of defending with the things you do best, like not trying to force traits that you don't necessarily have in your game into how you're going to defend, right? Zane Parekh is not going to be running guys through the boards. I think he's of some aggression. Yeah.
Twice on Thursday, he got belted.
Yeah.
Jumped right back up.
Yeah.
Very impressed by that.
Yeah. He's not afraid to, you know, he's not afraid to take the contact or dole out the contact. But Jay Bouwmeester was really good example of using your skating and your stick to defend. And I know that the clips that the Flames have watched most often with defensive zone play have been Quinn Hughes. You know, here's a guy who's not the biggest. Here's a guy who skates well, who has a good stick, and who's not just looking to kill a play, but is looking to kill a play and transition.
Zip it. Yep.
Transition up ice.
Yep.
Not, you know, Braden Pahal is trying to kill plays. Zane Parekh, they want to not just kill it, but then green light, go the other direction. And, you know, while Quinn Hughes is the modern day example, I think a lot of those traits were things that Jay Bouwmeester did well. It's a really interesting comparison.
And just for the record, two Olympic games for Jay Bouwmeester, including two Olympic gold medals, plus two World Cups of hockey, of which he won. So that of the four
and wore a defenseman number.
He did wear a defenseman number. Indeed, he did. Prior to the Four Nations face-off, the last four times, or yeah, I guess other than 04, 06, 10, 14, 16. Yeah, last four times outside of the 2010 games, Jay Bouwmeester was suiting up for Team Canada in a best-on-best opportunity. If you can get that from Zane Parekh, you're pretty happy, I think.
Ecstatic. Absolutely ecstatic.
Now, we're absolutely putting the cart in front of the horse after one game in the NHL. Mm-hmm. I grant you that. But, like, let me just say this before we hear from Craig Conroy. Flames fans are allowed to have good things. Like, you're allowed to have nice things. Like, what happens?
You're an example, Pat.
Yeah, okay. Like, what happens if Zane is really ready? Like, what happens if not only do they keep him in the NHL, which we'll get to kind of the things they can do in a second, but, like, what if he proves next season that he's like Lane Hudson? Like, we wondered about Lane Hudson coming into this year. Like, is he going to be able to, mm-hmm. like, what's it going to be? Like, are they going to protect him? Well, he might win the Calder Trophy.
Might.
Probably will win the Calder Trophy.
Yeah, that seems fair.
What if Zane Parekh is ready to go next season and is able to play 82 games? It's not a bad thing. Like, and it's not, the Flames won't be rushing him. Like, I guess my point is I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't know how it's going to go. But if you're excited and psyched for this guy, good on you, because there's reason to be. There is real reason to be excited for what this young man might be in a Flames jersey.
Yeah, absolutely. I really think, you know, you mentioned playing all 82. He could play 70-ish and go to the World Juniors to get a chance at a bigger role. I don't know that would be high on his radar just based on the sour experience he had this past winter, but maybe he and the Flames would decide, hey, you know, go run a power play, try and win a gold medal, all that stuff. So he could play 82, he could play, you know, 70 some and go to World Juniors. And I think a really realistic possibility is that he winds up on sort of a Leo Carlson type plan where he plays maybe 50 and does a whole lot of trying to add muscle. Zane Parekh right now is 186 pounds.
He wants to get to 193.
Wants to get to 193, said. Which yeah. would be 7 pounds, 7-8 pounds in a summer, which is
doable.
Which is doable and pretty good progress, to be honest. But, you know, with a few extra workouts in season next year, can you get him to 196? Can you do a little more targeted, and can you work him into your lineup? I don't know. Lane Hudson's a great example of a guy who they might have done something like that with, except, oh, geez, no, we can't take him out of the lineup.
And I wonder, like, what if that happens with Zane?
Well, I don't think they'd be upset about it at all.
This was General Manager Craig Conroy. This is actually back on Thursday when he joined Vix and I ahead of the debuts of the four guys at Crypto.com Arena and was asked about, like, thought process for next year when it comes to Parekh and what the Flames might do, knowing that he's not eligible to play in the American League.
We all know he's got to either play in the CHL or he's got to play in the NHL. So I want him, you know, definitely my idea or what I'm hoping, but I don't want to, you know, put the cart before the horse is, you know, you want him to play. I mean, I don't know what more he could possibly do in the CHL. Yep. But I don't want to put him in a situation where he's not ready to play in the NHL. So it's one of those, you know, rules that maybe you wish you could change a little bit where he could play in the American League, but it isn't.
So that was Craig Conroy from Thursday. He's going to go to the World Championship now. He won't join the Wranglers for their playoff run. Flames feel like, hey, going to play with the senior men's team, with how he got snubbed for the World Junior team, could be a really big opportunity. Be around those guys. Maybe get into some games. Maybe not get into some games. We'll see. We'll get into exhibition games and then go from there. But they feel like that's a more valuable experience for him, something he's never done before, than the American League, where who knows how long that's going to go and who knows how he'd be used. And so they feel like this is a really valuable experience for Parekh to go and be around some of the best in the game in Stockholm and in Europe and get that opportunity and then come back and you know, really hit the off-season training hard and get yourself ready for the start of the regular season. And there are, look, OHL doesn't really feel like a viable option. at least to start. The AHL is not an option next season. I know people have wondered about, well, why not loan him to a team in Europe? That I don't think is a viable option.
Because he's signed his entry-level, NCAA is not an option.
Yes.
I know some people have wondered about that as well.
Yes, cannot go to the NCAA either. And Europe doesn't make a ton of sense because you want Ray Edwards and the development crew. You want Rick and the strength and conditioning crew. You want Ryan Huska and the coaching staff. Like, you want your people to be with Zane. You don't want him 2,000, 4,000, 6,000 kilometers away, and you have to rely on, you know, secondhand reports and all that type of stuff. So the NHL is the most viable option in a not perfectly ideal situation for Zane Parekh. And
can I just add one thing on Europe?
Yeah.
I think as you focus on his gaps and you know, killing plays faster and not losing races to the front of the net, and just the priority list for Zane Parekh, I actually don't think being on the big ice helps him progress either.
Fair.
Obviously Worlds is going to be on big ice and those exhibition games. Well, it's not a bad thing to play a few games on international sized ice. I just don't think as a development tool for an entire season, you'd look at it that favorably.
Very fair. Yep. And you also have options if you're the Flames. So let's just assume for sake of this conversation, he does start in the NHL, which I think you and I would be shocked if there is any other, like, he would have to have a truly terrible training camp to not start in the NHL, I think, at this point. And I think the Flames will tailor his preseason and training camp to make it so he's in the best spot to make the team. But
you could very easily give him, I'm going to use a baseball term here, but you could very easily give him extended spring training.
Yeah.
Having the Wranglers here, I mean, the Flames carried 8 defensemen this entire season.
Yep.
If you don't think you can play Zane Parekh for the first few weeks of the season, just because he's struggled in camp and you need to boost up his confidence and get his comfort level up, you can just keep him around.
Yep. Yeah, they're not going to have cap issues. And you also have other options, too. Like, here's just a few of the options the Flames can have as the season goes along. Yes, playing 10 NHL games will burn the first year of his entry-level contract, but I think the Flames are prepared. Like, they basically have penned in that the first year of his entry-level deal will get burned next year. But look what happened. I've made this comparison a few times. Leon Draisaitl, in his first season in the NHL, played something like, I want to say, almost 40 games. I don't have it in front of me, but played almost 40 games before he got sent back to the Western League. And they did it before the UFA number kicked in. You have to 10 games burns your entry-level deal. I think it's 40 games. You accrue a year towards unrestricted free agency. It's either 7 accrued years of UFA, which is 40 or more games, or you're 27 years old. That's when unrestricted free agency hits for a player. And so they didn't give Leon a year towards his UFA, but it did burn a year of his entry level deal. So you could do that. You can, and if it just isn't working, well, then, hey, maybe Saginaw's playing well, or maybe there's another spot and you can do some wrangling behind the scenes and get him to an OHL team that you want him to be with, much like the Oilers did. And Leon got traded to Kelowna, and he went on and had a ridiculous run with Kelowna and then hasn't looked back since. You could do the World Junior route if, you know, you feel like things are starting to fall off a little bit. Well, send Zane to the World Juniors. And there's 3 weeks, a month of him playing like this high leverage, incredible tournament, and then he comes back, see how that energizes him. Or as you mentioned, you could do the Leo Carlson program where he's not playing every night. Like, there are options for the Flames that they can use to make this as ideal a thing as possible.
Yeah, absolutely. The one option that just really, I don't think either of us can see any value in is end of September or first week of October, back to the OHL.
Yeah, zero value at this point.
Yeah. He
Craig
looks,
Conroy basically said that.
Yeah, he looks at this point, not just looks on ice, but looks based on his stats like a player who's outgrown the major junior level. Could something happen next November, December that makes you question that? Maybe. But right now, if you broke into Craig Conroy's office, he's got a spot saved for Zane Parekh on the NHL roster.
Let's read a few texts. 960-960. This says Kuznetsov and Parekh will make a good third pair next year. Maybe that's the way it goes. Maybe he's playing with Kevin Ball. Like, who knows where that goes next year? Depends on how Zane does in training camp.
The all-rookie pair is bold.
I don't mind that. Why can't Zane Parekh play in the American League? Because he's not eligible. He'll be, quickly, Cole's notes, you have to be in your overage season in the CHL to play in the American League. If you are a CHL-drafted player like Parekh is, you're not eligible to play a full season in the American League until you're in your overage season or your 20-year-old season. Next season is Zane Parekh's 19-year-old season. That's a deal the CHL and the NHL have together, and so there's no way around it.
Yeah, and I know this one creates lots of confusion, but if you're drafted out of the Canadian Hockey League, that's how it works. Matt Vagerdeen is different. He was drafted out of the USHL. He would be eligible
to play
in the AHL. Yeah. I think a couple examples that people remember recently are Oliver Shillington and Martin Pospisil starting their AHL careers quite early.
18.
Because of where they were drafted. Yeah. Unfortunately for the Flames, in the case of Zane Parekh, he was drafted out of the Canadian Hockey League, which, as you said, it's a deal between essentially CHL, NHL, and AHL, gets in the way on this one.
And Calvin wonders why. It's to protect the CHL players. That's the reason why the CHL continues to push for this.
To protect the CHL organizations.
Sorry, not the players, to protect the teams.
Yeah,
so they don't lose their best 18, 19-year-old
players. Their 19-year-olds if they're not going to be in the NHL.
This says, don't overthink this. It's a no-brainer. Flames coddle their prospects too much. That's from John in Lethbridge.
John. Let me jump in here. We're going to be doing Flames talk for the next couple months. We gotta overthink everything,
it's
buddy.
It's true, we do.
We're overthinking everything.
We got months of off-season Flames talk. Curtis and Cranston says, if you have Parekh on the team next year, you need a Matthew Olivier type to defend the kid a bit. He'll get pushed around. Small kid, but very talented. Needs someone to make him feel safe. I don't know. With Lomberg and Pahal and Ball, I don't know. I don't really feel like that is a massive problem for the Flames next year.
No, I don't necessarily think so either. I mean, there's only a few. Matthew Olivier is certainly an exception at this point, but there's only a few heavyweight thumpers left, and they're just not dressing that often.
Yeah. Joe in Pembroke says, guys like Pahal, Hult plays dead in their tracks. Guys like Quinn Hughes hijack plays and then kickstart the jailbreak back on the other way. Very impressed with Parekh's Hughesian performance and looking forward to more in the future.
Who's that text from?
Joe in Pembroke.
Yeah, Joe, you took what I was trying to say.
And made it sound good.
Yeah, made it sound really good. Thank you, Joe. That was, Joe and I made that point together. I kind of handled the first draft.
And this one from Shane. Fellas, Jay Bouwmeester had a career high of 46 points in a season. I really hope the high-skill offensive defenseman in Parekh can be better than that. Not saying Bouwmeester wasn't good, just not sure if that's the comparison we should be making for him. I'm hoping for a lot more offensively than that. It wasn't an apples-and-apples comparison or apples-to-apples comparison. It was more that similar types of quote-unquote knocks on those players, and they ended up being really good defensemen.
And it sounds crazy to put it this way, but different, really different eras. I mean, we're in the age now, and I don't know what year I'd say this started, but we're in the age now of NHL teams activating their defense as common as can be, right? Like, you activate, as soon as you start on the attack, you're looking for one of your defensemen to join the rush. In Jay Bouwmeester's career, that wasn't the case. He did not have the sort of green light that Zane Parekh will have from start to finish.
It's Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk, and we are coming at you on this Tuesday from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Tuesday edition of our Daily Flames Roundtable now, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric, and informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary airport. It's Steinberg, Wes Gilbertson of Post Media, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Tuesday Daily Flames Roundtable. And our topic on this Tuesday, gentlemen, we'll do a few like these between now and the end of the week. Just a simple one, simple question. Don't know if it's a simple answer, but a simple question. Guys, who was your biggest surprise player of this past season? Who was the guy that kind of jumped off the page for you most that you weren't expecting to?
Well, I'm going to take the layup here, boys, and I'm going to go with Dustin Wolf. I mean, I went into the season believing he was one of the top goaltending prospects on the planet. I just didn't think that as a 23-year-old in his first full season as an NHLer that he would have the type of impact he did on the Calgary Flames. I think he was probably their most valuable player, and I say probably because I suspect we're going to have that conversation a little bit later on in the week, and I don't want to let the cat or the wolf out of the bag here, but he was just so impactful in so many ways, and I give the Flames a lot of credit for how patient they were in bringing Wolf along, because the organization has been super excited about him for a long time, but they didn't rush him. You know, he was two-time AHL goaltender of the year, league MVP, and I think some organizations would have tried to fast-track him, but the Flames didn't. They gave him the time he needed in the AHL and then gave him a little taste in the NHL and then a little bit bigger taste and then a huge taste this season. But you know, I think he was the single biggest reason why the Flames were in the fight for a playoff spot until game 81 and finished tied for most points in National Hockey League history for a non-playoff team. He was simply outstanding. And I thought it would take a little bit more time, guys. I really did. I didn't think that Dustin Wolf would immediately be an upgrade on an established number one guy who just a few years ago was the runner-up for the Vezina Trophy in Jacob Markstrom. But in my opinion, he absolutely was, especially in the final 50-plus games of the season when he was clearly the team's number one goaltender. But usually it takes defensemen longer to develop than forwards and goaltenders longer to develop than defensemen. So the fact that, you know, Dustin Wolf was one of the best goalies in the league and should be a finalist for the Calder Trophy at the age of 23, as high as I was on him, guys, still somewhat surprising for me.
I think layup is the right word for it. You took the obvious one, but I appreciate you, Willsy, leaving us some other guys. So I'm going to go, well, agreeing that the right answer is Dustin Wolf.
It is, because I think we all had high hopes for him, guys, but did we expect him to be a top five, top 10 goaltender in the NHL for the balance of the season?
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody would have put our hands up in September or October saying that. So it is the right answer. And I think that is the unanimous choice for number one.
Here's another guy who surprised me, and that's Matt Coronato. And I got to be honest, guys, if we go back to training camp, wasn't blown away by Matt Coronato. I maybe didn't immediately see the skating improvements that allowed him to be so successful this year. In fact, when the whole hullabaloo happened at the end of October about him getting sent down to the minors and everyone up and I kind of sat here, Pat, you'll remember this, and said, he's got to prove that they can't send him down. The onus is on him to make that statement, and that's absolutely what he did. I mean, in even a best case scenario, guys, I don't think I had Matt Coronato scoring 24 goals in his first full season in the NHL. When Blake Coleman said the other day, "Oh yeah, this guy's gonna score 30 in the NHL," it was just a bunch of people nodding along because it seemed like such an obvious statement, and so, you know, combining that with the way Dustin Wolf performed as a rookie, I think the emergence or maybe continued emergence of Matt Coronato, who was the youngest regular on the roster, who I think I wrote this a few days ago and I don't remember the exact number. I think there were five or six players younger than him in the NHL this season who had more goals. And it's a list of guys like Wyatt Johnston and Dylan Gunther, like
pretty good players.
Yeah, really good company. And so that, and I know, Pat, I've still left you plenty of guys to choose from, but that would be my runner up for biggest surprise, understanding that Dustin Wolf kind of knocked all our socks off.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's a couple of other names that you could throw into this conversation outside of the guy that I'm going to name. I think Adam Klapka and what he did in the back quarter of this season. I don't know if we saw that coming with the way things had gone prior to that. That was pretty impressive. I think Braden Pahal and, you know, kind of establishing himself. And I know that maybe the second half of the season wasn't as strong for Braden as the first half of the season was. But, you know, Pahal for the first time in his career was essentially a full-time NHLer this year. And I don't know how many people saw that as clearly being the case going into the season. But, guys, the one guy that I wasn't sure if I was going to be able if it was going to be left for me to take or not. But if I look back to September, Wilsey, I think that had you told me that Dustin Wolf was going to be ranked in the same conversation or grouped in the same conversation with the best goalies in the NHL, I was saying, yeah, maybe, but not probably not. He's our rookie and he's going to split games with Dan Vladar. That is a surprise. And had you told me Matt Coronato is going to, you know, score almost 25 and look like a clear 30 goal, like perennial 30 goal threat, I would have said, maybe not right now. But had you told me that Joel Hanley was going to be the answer to Calgary's final piece of the top four puzzle, had you told me that in September, October, November, I would have laughed at you. I would have said, no, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. What are you talking about? And yet, where would the Flames be if Joel Hanley didn't just kind of form a nice, steady pairing with Mackenzie Weegar just before the midway mark of the season? Joel Hanley felt like he was number 12 on the depth chart when the season started. He was on the team. They didn't put him on waivers, but he was number 8 with a bullet, and it felt like guys in the American League, even though they were playing with the Wranglers, were ahead of Hanley on the depth chart. And even, you know, I remember what was two and a half months ago, Wilsey, we had the conversation about, like, do you put this player in or that player in over Hanley? And you were very adamant that, no, I wouldn't do that. And turned out to be right. Like Joel Hanley was an extremely important part of this blue line this year. And it allowed the Flames to have two pairings that were kind of set and forget when everybody was healthy, because the Ball-Anderson pairing was just rolled out and you knew that was going to be the case. And now all of a sudden we started putting Hanley and Weegar at the top of our depth chart when we were tweeting out lines because of how well they played. And all of a sudden Hanley's averaging 20 plus minutes a game. I would not have seen any of that coming. I still am not in the camp of clearly re-sign him, or that I would be going down the road of bringing him back in unrestricted free agency. But I can tell you, if the Flames do decide to do that, it's not one that you can dislike. It's not one that you can say, how would you do that? He was a good soldier to begin with, and then a very valuable piece of the infantry by the end of the year. And guys, I would not have seen that coming in a billion years had you told me Joel Hanley was going to be as important as he was this season in September or October. So he would be the final guy that I would add to this conversation.
How about I jump in here?
Did we lose Wilsey? Okay, we'll get Wilsey back. Yeah, jump right in.
You know, it speaks to how many...
Do we have Wilsey back?
I'm back.
There you are.
Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead.
Opal was breaking up, so I tried to disconnect and reconnect quickly, but I wasn't quick enough. Yeah, I mean, Joel Hanley would have been number 2 on my list. I wouldn't have been surprised that after the preseason, if he would have been the guy in waivers, and if they would have kept a younger defenseman or another veteran defenseman, because it felt like they had some choices there. But they kept Joel Hanley. He was the number 8 guy to start the season, and then, you know, you could argue he moved up to 7 and then to 6 and then, yeah, to a top pairing guy who played on all 3 pairings over the course of the season and was out way more than in the first 30-ish games and then hardly ever came out in the final 50 or so games of the season. So, you know, he was a very pleasant surprise. I'd love for the Flames to bring him back because of his versatility and because I think he is, yes, an older player, but an older player with a lot of tread on his tires simply because he hasn't played a lot of hockey as a professional. You know, he's been a guy who's been in and out and up and down, and I still think that there's potentially a little bit of room to grow for Joel Hanley, and I think he'd be a great veteran guy to partner with one of the Flames' younger defensemen. So depending on what the deal would look like, I can't say today that, yes, bring Joel Hanley back. Somebody might be willing to give him 3 or 4 years and more money than the Flames would be willing to give him. But for the right term and the right AAV, I would absolutely look at bringing Joel Hanley back. But they got a lot of good young defensemen in the system, so we'll see how everything plays out over the course of the summer. I really like Matt Coronato. For me, we knew he was a goal scorer. What I didn't know personally was, you know, how hard he would work and how effective he could be, even when he wasn't putting the puck on the net or in the net. A lot of guys who are natural goal scorers like Coronato sometimes don't bring a lot of other things to the table, but I thought Coronato especially, when playing in line with Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman, was a really effective 200-foot player who was good with the puck, obviously, but also without the puck. The other guy who I would throw in there, fellas, is Jonathan Huberdeau. And it might sound silly to say that, but and I know he's the highest-paid player on the team, and he should be producing, but when you look at the regression we saw from him in the previous three seasons, he goes from 3 goals on 115 points in his final season with the Panthers, 15 goals and 55 points in his first season with the Flames, to 12 goals and 52 points last season. He scored 28 goals and had 62 points this season. And I think he was banged up down the stretch, and that's why we saw him fall off a little bit offensively. But Jonathan Huberdeau, I would argue, would be fourth on my MVP ballot. So the top three, in no particular order, because I think we're going to have this chat later in the week, would be, I'll mix it up, Mackenzie Weegar, Nazem Kadri, and Dustin Wolf. But for me, Jonathan Huberdeau, probably until the final couple of weeks, would have been in strong consideration to be top three, but I'd put him fourth. I think he was a really impactful player, and with the regression we saw from him the past few years, I wasn't convinced we were going to see some progression from him this season, but we certainly did.
And have we not mentioned Kevin Ball yet, who would have been a candidate going into this conversation in terms of a guy who I know that we all anticipated he'd get an opportunity to play top 4 minutes. I know that for both he and his partner, Rasmus Anderson, it certainly started better than it maybe ended. As the season wore on, there were more than a few challenging nights, and yet I think Kevin Ball's a guy who showed he can be a top 4 defenseman in the NHL, and I'd throw his name in the sort of surprise mix. Wills, yeah. You mentioned Jonathan Huberdeau. This isn't just a single player surprise, but one of the more surprising developments of the year was probably his chemistry with Nazem Kadri, because there just didn't seem to be much of a fit there. And we're now just talking about the positive surprises. You know, there were some surprises on the other side of the ledger too, starting with Yegor Sharangovich and what was a struggle of a season. So no shortage of surprises on that Flames roster this year.
And I mean, the Flames as a team, guys, were a surprise. Maybe that's the biggest surprise of them all, right? I mean, when you consider the fact they were 31st in Sportsnet's preseason power rankings and finished with 96 points, tied for most in NHL history by a non-playoff team, we went through all of the pleasant surprises collectively. I think the biggest reason why the Flames as a team were one of the biggest surprises in the NHL this season, pleasantly.
I have other ideas. I've got MVP. I've got a player you're most looking forward to. I've got one free agent target and one UFA player you'd re-sign. All of these are candidates for the final three roundtables of the year. Don't know which order we'll go in, but we'll get to three of those topics at least before the end of the week on the Daily Flames Roundtable. For now, Wilsey, have a good rest of your Tuesday. We'll do it again on Wednesday's show.
Okay, guys, gonna go cut the grass. Have a good night.
Hey, it's better than building a snowman. He's Derek Wills. He is Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. That's your Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport as we start to wrap things up this hour on the program. He's Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Virgie, our outstanding producers this hour, and this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.